rhythm. You throw in the interception, pick six by Bud Clark. Comfortable 13-point lead. And in my opinion, the way that first half went, it's a big drive for the North Carolina defense.
That was the Capital One rewarding performance, and this is a rewarding run as Gavorian Barnes is out the gate, inside the 30, to the 10. Touchdown TCU, 75 yards and no flags.
This is a really important drive for this North Carolina defense. House call. Herb Street there with that Carl Ravitch. Who is that?
Chris Fowler?
No, that's not Fowler.
That's not Fowler?
Reese Davis. Carl Ravitch, the baseball guy. That's Reese Davis. Anyway, Jeremy and Joe and Howard. Howard's here.
What's going on, boys?
Let's go.
How are you?
What's going on? Anything happening this weekend? I'm trying to think of something to do.
Who's Syracuse play? I'll send you to the Carrier Dome.
Let me
get you what a great little football team called Liverpool Football Club is up to this weekend.
Didn't they just
Sunday 9 a.m. at Burnley, top of the table?
Syracuse
That's
plays
what you want to be
UConn,
doing.
UConn. You should win. Who knows?
Did you guys just beat Arsenal?
Yes.
1-0. Yeah.
Did you have a little side wager or anything?
We did not.
No,
we did not.
All right.
What's our latest
he wouldn't bet?
Bet against
What's our latest bet we have?
It's been a minute.
It's been a while. We need to bet.
We need to erase Beans' wide receiver train from up there. Yeah, we're gonna need
it.
To bet.
Yeah, he said it.
Our home opener bet for 2026.
That's a fun one.
We have a while for that one.
Yeah.
We'll see. Maybe Howard picks them to win, and then we can figure out who they're going to play
in
Thursday.
Who's going to be the first home opponent?
Who's their first opponent?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also like a two-year-old bet.
The Chiefs.
No way. Too good of a game. Miami.
Then it would be an old AFL rival.
Miami or New England.
Jets, an old AFL rival, any of those three.
See, I think if they've won the Super Bowl, it's the Chiefs.
I suppose
the
that
Thursday
would be,
night opener.
Ooh, a Thursday night opener to start the stadium when they hang the banner?
Against Kansas City?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Come
on. To win the Super Bowl in that scenario.
The Bills would beg the NFL, like, please give them us.
You're bogging us down with details.
Let us put the banner up with them here, please.
Yeah, that would be nice.
All right, Howard's going to pick the Bills. We've plenty to get to here. Dwayne Carter out for the year. That's a little bit of news. We'll get injury designations on the Bills tomorrow when they're at practice. In the meantime, you know, I saw you and Bove and Joe Biscaglia on the Leading the Charge show. I did see Bove predict Bills-Packers Super Bowl.
Yes.
I did not. They didn't put on social media what your prediction was. What was it?
Joe and I only gave the records for the season. We don't normally predict what happens in the postseason. Bove was feeling pretty good with his Super Bowl thing.
Bills-Packers. So
he jumped the gun and go ahead and said Bills-Packers Super Bowl.
All right. Very, very good.
I would not, as we sit here today, I would not predict the Bills in the Super Bowl.
No.
No.
You can tell us about that after you predict them to go 15-2 anyway, though, because their schedule is nice.
Well, yeah, I guess, because that they'd be 15-1 playing a meaningless game at the end of the season.
True.
Yeah.
All right, let's just do it. Howard picks the Bills.
A tradition unlike any other.
That's what the people want. They're outside our windows chanting.
I thought I saw a group
pick
of people with signs
Bills.
That said pick the Bills.
Pick the Bills.
Time for Howard to pick the Bills.
Something's going to be different.
Yeah.
Howard's going to pick the Bills,
yeah.
And this is going to be different this
time.
All right.
Allen going to step up in the pocket. Now he's going to take it and run, and he's got the first down and more. 10, 5, and muscles his way into the end zone for an unbelievable touchdown run.
If they lose this game, I'm telling you right now, I'm calling in sick Tuesday.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
So Ronnie Stanley of the Ravens says about this game, quote, "That team sent us home out of the playoffs. I don't think it's just going into any normal game per se. We were very unhappy with the result last time we were there. A lot of us will give anything to leave there with a dub." Defensive tackle Nnamdi Madubuike agrees. The Ravens, quote, "want to get that bad taste out of their mouths." Week one, Bills, Ravens, Sunday Night Football, the final opener from Highmark Stadium. A lot of lasts.
Maybe they should talk to Mark Andrews to vent that anger if they get a chance.
He was a part of it.
Yeah, he was a big part of it.
He was a big part of it. Fumble and a drop in the end zone.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, I think Baltimore's going to be really good this year. I think they will win their division unless the Bengals have magically fixed their defense. And I think Lamar Jackson's obviously one of the top quarterbacks in the league. Derrick Henry, I don't have to go through the whole list. But, come on. Home opener, final year at Highmark. prime time. Place is going to be nuts. What are you using? What's the tailgate dining plan?
None for me. I don't know.
Okay. You're going, right?
I don't know if I'm going to
night game. Duh. Yeah, you got to be up at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
I've got factors.
Yeah.
I'm trying to still decide how it's all going to work, so I'll figure it out.
Also, you've done Old Bay. Do we really need to have Old Bay again?
Right.
It's fine.
You could.
It's
what overrated. If you got a police escort right when the game ended?
Could work.
All right. I will take the Bills. It's going to be a great game. I think it's going to be a matchup of two teams that might be playing for an AFC championship come later this season. Okay. But I'll take the Bills to win the opener.
Bills win the opener, beating the Ravens. Listen, I don't want to pick the Ravens to win this game, but I will not be the least bit surprised.
Oh, it's extremely winnable for them. Yes. Yeah, I wouldn't be stunned if the Bills lost.
Extremely winnable, and I'm really wondering about the new-look defensive line trying to come together, leaning on Sanders and Walker in this game quite a bit. We'll see.
Bosa with a managed snap count.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry. I thought Derrick Henry was going to not necessarily fall off the shelf, but take another step backwards that last year, which he did not, obviously. And you always have to worry about Jackson and their top receivers and their tight end. Yeah, if the Ravens come in here and win, it's not stunning, fellas. I just think the Bills will win, but it'll be a really close, great ball game.
From there, things get a lot easier. We'll see if they, you know, have any sort of missteps. But the Bills, arguably their toughest game of the season, is the first one. And then, you know, all right, at the Jets, Sunday, 1 o'clock.
What do you think of the Jets? What are we thinking, boys?
I think that they're going to try and change the culture and claim they do that when they win 6 games.
And I think a lot of their games will be low scoring.
Yeah.
Their coach is all about protect the football. He doesn't think passing, whatever. He says, if you pass a lot, you have a losing record. He said something like that about, like passing is. I think he might be one of these guys that for now says, when you pass it, 3 things happen, and 2 are bad. And he has Justin Fields, who is a sack machine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You cannot play protect the football if you have a sack machine back there. So I think the Jets are in trouble because of that.
Yeah, I just don't see, the Jets might make some strides, but I think that's more about how bad they used to be. Mm-hmm. So I will take the Bills. I just don't see the Jets pulling that one off, even though it's down in Jersey.
Okay. Then we're off to a Thursday night affair with the Miami Dolphins, week 3.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I had a great Dolphin stat. Give me a second. I saw this on, do I have to call it X? I can still call it Twitter, right?
Yeah, whatever you want.
I saw this on Twitter the other day, and I thought it was really, the whole thing about the Dolphins don't beat anybody.
It's not that they haven't won a playoff game in basically my entire lifetime.
When was the last time they won a playoff game?
2000. Looked it up the other day.
I don't know. I can't find it. I'll find it later.
Okay.
Here we go. Dolphins versus good and bad teams. Okay. Since 2023, Dolphins are 2-10 against teams that finished with a record above 500. They are 17-5 against sub 500 teams in the same time frame.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you want to know what Mike McDaniel's record is when Tua starts and finishes games?
What is it?
It's a winning percentage just like Andy Reid's.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
They've lost a lot of games because
he gets hurt.
They get backup quarterbacks in, and they completely fall apart. Anyway.
When Tua plays against good teams, they still lose.
But again, part of that, though, is their offense is designed, you have to process everything in 2 seconds because the ball's got to be out.
Yeah.
So there's no backup in the league that can work that.
No.
Because their quarterback is unhealthy.
I will take the Bills because, I don't think Miami's good. And I'm not sure McDaniel will make it through the season. I'll take the Bills.
Worst secondary in the league.
Oh, their corners are a mess right now.
Yep.
All right, win. So the Bills win and get the victory over the Dolphins. Next up for the Bills schedule. Back home, they are going to be 30-point favorites against the Saints.
We didn't need to spend any time on this game, right?
Okay, sure.
Is it the lockiest lock of the whole schedule?
Yeah. Yes. Put it this way. It would be their dumbest loss.
In a decade.
I mean, they lost to Urban Meyer.
This would be worse.
This
would be worse.
Then losing to Urban Meyer 9-6.
Yes.
At home to
check the spread in that game. Were they 8-point favorites? 10?
No, more than that.
13?
It would be on the road, right?
You're losing to Spencer Rattler at home.
The Bills were 14.5 point favorites that day.
This spread will be bigger.
Okay.
Spread will be 17.
It's a win.
Win. Home Patriots, Sunday Night Football, and the rivalries uniforms, the white snow, white on white, ice cracking, all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
And Stephon Diggs and the Patriots return. Mike Vrabel says Diggs expected to play week one for them. So he
Mac
should be
Hollins
back.
Revenge game.
That's right.
He'll be walking into the stadium shoeless. I will take the Bills to win the game.
Bills beat the Patriots.
I already want to be asking, what's the record for the most wins to start a season for the Bills ever? Is it more than five? Because you just picked them to go 5-0.
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of early 90s teams.
Then the Bills go to Atlanta for a Monday night game against the Falcons.
Joe jinxed it by saying, you know, what's the best start they've had? So I'll take a Bills loss there. Blame Joe.
Blame Joe. You were so happy when I said that. He's like, you knew you were picking a loss. Like, oh,
thank you, Joe.
I can't blame Joe here.
Now I want to see Sean McDermott's all-time record against left-handed quarterbacks. Because Michael Penix Jr. is left-handed.
He beats Tua a lot.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You're telling me they're going to lose to a left-handed quarterback?
Sorry.
They might.
Blame Joe.
Lose to the Falcons for their first loss of the season. Take a bye week and then go to Carolina.
Bills South.
Yes.
Be a lot of Bills fans in at the stadium in Charlotte for that one. I'll take the Bills.
Bills win. Home against the Chiefs November 2nd. Have you heard my theory on this game?
No.
My big theory on this game is that you have the Bills at, what's their record right now? Something in one?
Something in one.
He's had them beating Carolina 6-1.
Okay, 6-1. If they win this game, they would go to 7-1. And the Chiefs, in that same time frame, their schedule goes Chargers, Eagles, Giants, Ravens, Jags, Lions, Raiders, Commanders.
They ain't going to be 6-1.
Four or five.
They're not going to be 6.
Games.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So, the Bills will be playing that day to ensure they're not going to go to Arrowhead. It's November 2nd, and we will kind of look at it and say, you win this game, you're not going to Arrowhead.
Wow.
You might go somewhere else,
but
you're not going there.
Yeah. All right. Hey, let's take the Bills in that one.
All right. Bills win.
Let's just get rid of the Chiefs once and
Aren't
for all.
Aren't you supposed to pick them to lose so then they beat them in the playoffs? Because I know that conversation is coming for us again.
The Bills and the Chiefs in the playoffs? That never happens. Mm. I'm sorry. I don't recall those games.
All right. Bills beat the Chiefs. They are what now?
7-1.
7-1. Next up, home doll, or sorry, at Miami.
Sweep.
Home Bucks.
That's one of those. I'm gonna keep that as a didn't see that one coming. But you know, struggling at home to the Bucks has happened in recent history. I'll say Baker Mayfield makes a few plays and they win the game.
Struggling at home to the Bucks has happened in recent
Didn't
history.
Didn't they have a tough game against Baker at home? What?
They almost
a couple years ago,
they
3
almost,
years ago?
If Chris Godwin looks up a second earlier, he catches a Hail Mary to win the game.
Yeah, so that game is in my head.
I don't remember it.
Thursday night game. Remember we kept yelling about they weren't running Allen and they weren't playing high tempo and they came out on that drive like a million miles an hour running Allen.
That's right.
And then the game kind of slowed down from there because
Tampa
Dorsey
just hung around.
Bills at Texans Thursday night.
Yeah, tough short week road game. I think Texans are still good, so I'll take Houston.
Back to back losses here. Wow.
We should just stop the segment right now.
And suddenly we're back to talking about whether they have to go to Arrowhead.
Right. At Pittsburgh.
I don't know that I could ever and be able to sleep pick them to lose a game to the Steelers. So I'll take a win.
Thank you.
Howard, maybe you didn't see this. Aaron Rodgers has been named a team captain. A sign that he's really bought in.
Oh, you're being serious.
That they really respect him, and he's bought in. He's a leader for them. He's been named a team captain.
The Jets said the same thing.
I saw it was pointed out. It was a Pittsburgh writer that said that, and then someone astutely pointed out that every starting quarterback for the Steelers is always a captain. Russell Wilson was a captain.
Is that right?
Kenny Pickett was a captain.
That's funny. Well, they all bought in.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
All right, so win over the Steelers. Mm-hmm. Home Bengals.
Yeah, and I'm going to make this a win. I'll reserve the possibility of changing that. I need to see the Bengals defense. It was atrocious last year.
Okay.
Always worry about Joe Burrow, but that defense has to show me something for now. Bills win.
At the Patriots.
So I'm just going to stay off social media for this one. I'm going to throw in a Patriots win here. Mm.
Is the division in play? What's the record?
I don't think the division will be in play.
Four losses.
I think
four losses with 3 weeks to go. What does New England already have? Seven?
They're 10-5.
Maybe it will be. I don't know. But the Bills.
The Bills are.
10-5.
No, they're not.
That's
they're
what I got yet.
Four losses.
Right. 11.
Four losses with one loss to New England. So like,
I think they'll win the division. I don't think it'll be a cakewalk like last year. I think New England will be a tough out.
Okay, I'm saying that if New England wins that game, there's work still to do.
Don't you want it more exciting at the end of the season?
I have said that in the past.
See, there you go. You got drama.
Bills, Browns.
Win.
Eagles at Bills.
Loss.
And then Jets at Bills.
Sweep.
You're going to need that one, maybe. They're going to play to win. You got five losses. You got to make sure 12 and 5. 12 and 5. Okay, 12 and 5.
One loss in the division. One loss. Should be good enough.
Is it the one seed? Maybe.
Not 12 and 5.
With tiebreakers over Baltimore and Kansas City.
It could be 12 and it could be one seed.
It's going to be close.
Well, the Chiefs will have a little tougher division this year, right?
Yeah.
Chargers, Broncos are on the way up.
Your number one seed, Denver Broncos. You ready for that?
No, not really.
I don't think so, but
That'd
we'll
be
see.
Pretty funny.
All right, but you don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl?
Not right now. I have too many questions about the defense. I really do. I think the secondary could be cross your fingers and pray, at least for the first few weeks of the season, depending on whether Trey plays. Let's see how they overhaul the defensive line. I need to see how that does. There's just too much stuff going on, the safety situation, for me to sit here and say, guys, this is a Super Bowl team for sure. It's a Super Bowl offense. But why haven't they made the Super Bowl in the Josh Allen era? The defense. Need to see that change. I need to see him play well this year.
Just saw at The Athletic, 31 NFL coaches and executives were asked if you could start a franchise from scratch, who are the top three quarterbacks you would take? So who got the most votes?
Mahomes.
Josh Allen.
Oh, good. See, an MVP award changes things.
Mahomes and Burrow are tied second place. Jaden Daniels.
Wow.
Is the fourth named. Lamar, fifth. Herbert, sixth. And then Drake May, C.J. Stroud, Baker Mayfield.
Uh-oh. Ravens are going to put this on the bulletin board. They're disrespecting Lamar Jackson.
I mean, that is pretty offensive.
It's pretty low.
I think it's pretty offensive. It should be Allen one. And it should be Allen and Jackson one, too.
Yeah, Lamar's
five for him.
Well, now
nuts.
I got to pick the Bills to lose the game. I'm kidding. Boys, enjoy the season.
Thank you. Thanks for coming in. We'll talk in a week. You got to do this every week. You forgot about that, didn't you?
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, you forgot about that.
I thought it was once a month.
I really think you forgot about that until right now.
I was having a nice summer.
I'm coming in next week.
We're back weekly again. Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah. You get to overreact if they lose to Baltimore.
I can't. Well, not that that would ever happen on this program. I'm sure that would be.
If they win, 14-3. If they lose, 7-10.
That's you. You're speaking?
No.
Seven? Okay.
We'll see.
You want another bet? I'll bet he never picks a losing record for them.
Oh, it's an easy bet, yeah.
That is an easy bet, unless you keep jinxing things.
It's probably been years since he did
Do you want to pick the North Carolina Tar Heels?
They'll win. I mean, they'll win games.
They play UNC Charlotte.
The ACC's not good, right?
No.
Oh, they play Charlotte, right.
UNC Charlotte, and then they have another
I might have to go to that Syracuse game now. I got to be there.
Is that the dome?
Yeah.
Why not?
Just a womp
go just to Boo Belichick.
Why not?
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. If you were there and they beat him by 40.
It'd be great. All right, 803-0550, our phone number. Thank you, Howard.
Anytime, fellas.
Game week, Baltimore.
All right, welcome into hour number two here on a Wednesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on One Bills Live. And pleased to welcome back ESPN NFL analyst. Is that special music for Dan?
It's time for Dan.
That's seriously
my timer for him.
Welcome in ESPN NFL
right on
analyst
time too.
Dan Orlovsky. Dan Orlovsky's appearances on One Bills Live are presented by Caesars Sportsbook, an official mobile sports betting partner of the Buffalo Bills. How's that for an intro? Dan, welcome back. Glad to have you with us for another season. And I want to begin with the offseason work of Brandon Bean here, because clearly he saw their defensive front as a major deficiency for their entire operation. He adds three free agents. He adds three draft choices for the defensive line alone. And we know Michael Hoyt and Ogunjobi are not a part of the equation. They're out on suspension until week seven. But what did you gather from maybe some of the preseason tape, from some of the new additions that are going to probably be lining up to a great degree on Sunday night?
Yeah, good to be with you guys. Steve, don't worry. I have like three timers set throughout my day just randomly to remind me of things. I don't even know what sometimes. So I'm with
you. At least you rate one of my timers. Let me just say that. Yeah, right?
Yeah. Awesome. You know, I think it's attached to this. And I would say, and we've talked about that, I think Brandon's kind of vantage point or the way he looked at the defense was – it's good enough for so long. And, you know, kind of what I'm referencing is they rode the turnover wave like we talked about last year. And I think one of the things that they had to honestly look at was they were so dominant in many ways on the offensive side of the line of scrimmage. The offensive line really became a strength and allowed them to, in many ways, do whatever they wanted to offensively. defensively and defensive line wise, that still wasn't the case. And I think his just desire to get that defensive line on the same level of the offensive line and maybe not be so reliant on takeaways. If you get them, great. They're awesome. But more so like having the ability to play a dominant brand of football where it doesn't have to be, if we get two turnovers, we'll win the game. And if we don't, we won't. And so, you know, the preseason tape is always tough just because who are they? Who are they going against? What's the game plan? All that stuff. Who are they playing with? And so, you know, I think that the pieces that were added strategically and specifically. But I do think it's through the prism of just trying to play more dominant football at the line of scrimmage on the defensive side.
Yeah, and you talk about we'll talk more about the defense in a minute. I want to ask you this. I mean, you got Josh, the MVP, and by all accounts, the level of across the board of playmakers around him, particularly at the wide receiver position with Joshua Palmer, with Shakir coming back, with Keon Coleman really taking a step forward, at least in training camp, looks to be a different kind of player. They look much better and more talented and more complete on the outside after having an offensive season that was pretty good. And as you said, this is a team that was 49-51% run-pass-pass-run. You've been a part of offense in the NFL. Where do you go from there? You can run it when you want. You can throw it when you want. Like, what is another step that they could take offensively that would be discernible to an average fan?
Yeah, that's the question. So Palmer's been a guy, and maybe fans don't know Palmer as a household name. He's a guy that has been just crazy talented since he came out of the University of Tennessee a couple years ago. With the Chargers, it was a little bit health and a little bit just the lack of quarterback play out there until Herbert got there and got healthy. He is very talented. And I also like the fact that I like the big framed guys on the outside for this offense. You know, he is not a small guy. Shakir is the little bit of the slighter height, more shifty guy. Josh is a big framed, really smooth, really good route running receiver. So you take those two perimeter players with their size on the outside, that changes anything that offense was capable of last year, just because you have more winners, whether they're matchup winners or whether they're just, hey, we're going to give you a chance winner. So those two guys, if they're really able to, one, take a step forward in Keon, and two, Palmer to just solidify himself, that's a big elevation in your pass game. I think the second thing is the two things that stood out under Joe Brady last year from an evolution when it comes to the scheme was, and again, we talked about it, was the six offensive line stuff that they did and then the 4-by-1 stuff that they did. And it kind of, you know, they were the few teams that was one of the few teams that were doing it as much and doing it as well. And I've sat here and asked myself, is that what they're going to live in again this year? Or is there another thing that they're going to add schematically? Are they going to do more out of it? Because I thought the beauty of it was they did simple stuff out of that, I guess, window dressing or creative pre-snap stuff. And so where do they go from there is you can continue to become better on the perimeter with those two players. And I just wouldn't be shocked if there's either more out of those two sets or another schematic staple that Brady has that can be a calling card for the offense.
Yeah, I mean, we even saw more of Reggie Gilliam at the end of the season last year. There was more traditional I formation and offset I. And I'm wondering if we're going to see more of that. Then you couple that with fifth-round draft pick Jackson Hawes out of Georgia Tech, widely considered the best blocking tight end in the entire draft class, and has been getting nothing but accolades from veteran teammates here about his blocking exploits. And that's from offensive linemen applauding him, not other tight ends. I think he's going to be doing a lot of that dirty work that Alec Anderson did last year. And, oh, by the way, that guy can go out and run and catch passes.
Yeah, and that's a big – I think – you know, we're in a time in the NFL right now. It's very different than it was 5 years ago with the way teams are playing offenses, at least the ones that have the really explosive quarterbacks. And so I think the more that you can create personnel matchups, dictation to a defense, and you're really, I mean, tight end is one of those positions that I would say is the only one you can dictate personnel to defensively. When you put receivers on the field, teams are going to match with corners and nickels. when you put tight ends on the field, it's like, okay, how are defenses going to treat them? And you can't have enough of good players at that position. I think the other thing that I'll have my eye on, not only in the Sunday night football game, but just as the season goes, is those two receivers that I just kind of talked about in Keon and Josh Palmer, how committed and how capable are they to blocking in the run game? It's a big deal in Buffalo. Mac Hollins was absolutely fantastic at it. Yeah. He was incredibly selfless at it, and he was very good at it. And it helped create explosive runs for James Cook. How committed are those two guys to doing that 17 plus weeks this season and doing it at a high level, I do believe is a very, very big deal for that offense.
Well, we were enamored, and rightfully so, with Josh and his MVP performance last year in this offense, and they scored more points than any team in franchise history, which is saying something. But so was Baltimore, right? They had a phenomenal year offensively as well. Lamar threw for 40 plus touchdowns. Derrick Henry was an absolute game wrecker. What do you see from them this year? As you know, it's kind of the same question I just posed about the Bills offense.
Yeah. I mean, there's the reality that both these places are very much so in the same place. They're two of the best teams in football. They got two of the best quarterbacks in football. And that question still looms, is which one of them is going to be the one that gets over the hump, so to speak. And so, you know, I think that with Baltimore, last year was the first year in the second year with Lamar and Todd Monken, now in their third year, where you saw it all. They had to figure out Derek as the season went on. How were they going to use him? How were they going to put Lamar in the gun, Lamar in the center? You know, one, Zay Flowers didn't play in the playoff game last year, and that mattered. And so just his vertical juice and ability to stretch a field is a big deal. There's not much that I expect to change. This is a wildly versatile offense. They got so many different pieces with a player like a Patrick Ricard or Isaiah Likely or Mark Andrews. They have one of the best quarterbacks in football, an offensive line that settled into being one of the best in football this past season. And so, you know, there's not much different about this team. I do think it's a little bit more on the other side of the ball, Steve, and I would say this is in the conversation for the best secondary in football Baltimore has, now that they've added Jaire Alexander, and it's the second year of Nate Wiggins. I mean, you have Jaire, you have Wiggins, you have Humphrey, you have Kyle Hamilton. This is an elite, elite, elite ball hawking, can do whatever they want secondary. And so that's really, I think, where you might see them even grow more Baltimore than they were last year is, you know, defensively they started very rocky and then settled in. But adding a piece like Jaire is a big deal.
Yeah, you had Malachi Starks in there who's going to start next to Hamilton. They're all first-round picks, every last one of them. All former first-round picks. So they should be elite. It was interesting. We listened to Coach McDermott and his press conference today, and he was throwing bouquets at Todd Monken because he, you know, this is a guy that obviously cut his teeth on the defensive side of the ball in the NFL, and he said he doesn't feel Todd Monken gets enough credit for his ability to keep opposing defenses off balance. What would you say is the greatest attribute of Todd Monken's scheming and play calling?
Well, I think, one, Monken does a great job of utilizing all their different pieces to their strengths. You know, I mentioned Ricard and Likely. He never really asks those guys to do something that they're not. And there's also a reality, guys, where those two are very difficult to match up against. We have talked about that for a couple of years now.
Right.
So I think that figuring out the fine line of when to place Lamar under center and not run from the simple stuff of like, we're better than you, but then also utilize defenses keying on that to your advantage, when to place Lamar in the gun, and not overthink some of the potential quarterback run stuff. The motion use that they got to last year, that was probably the biggest step for them scheme-wise last year, is their ability to run with motion. That became a calling card of theirs, and that necessarily wasn't the year before. And so I think he's got this very – it's not all different than Joe Brady. Like, he's got this very creative mindset, and their staple offensive plays that I think allow players to execute at a high level and play fast, with complicating the things that you have to look at or think about pre-snap. And so he's getting his guys to play fast while you defensively are playing slow with the lot that he presents. And so he's become one of the best play callers in the league.
So you've got this game coming up, and you got all these new players. Or, you know, for the Bills, particularly defensively, you've got some young guys they're going to have to contribute. And some of them, even on the defensive line, some rookies are going to rotate in. I mean, it's going to be their first NFL game that's played for keeps, and it's going to be on a Sunday night football against the Baltimore Ravens in the last home opener of the entire stadium's history. It's a lot in this, right? All your hopes and dreams, you're seeing them all come true as you take the field. What's your advice? And Brownie just asked me before we had you on, what's your advice for a young player, rookie player, how to handle a big moment like this where, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's only game one, but man, oh man, what a moment.
Yeah, I think you got to embrace the moment and realize that it's very real. You know, I had a coach one time when I was playing, you know, and this is obviously not on the same scale at all, but when I was at UConn, we were transferring from one stadium to another stadium, and it was the opening game of the new stadium. And he grabbed me before I was kind of walking out of the tunnel, and he said, like, you need to walk out there and feel all of this, all of the energy, all of the excitement, all the juice. Like, you have to take a walk and look all around and embrace it and appreciate it and just be in it. And then you have to lock into the football game. And I wasn't thinking about it in that moment. And it was great for me to kind of, okay, like, enjoy it and experience. It is awesome. Like, it's awesome. You've earned the right to kind of play in these types of games, even though it's game one, but there's a lot of history attached to it, to your point, Steve. But then you have to lock into going and playing the game and doing your job and doing what you're kind of paid to do. And so that's the message to the young kids is go take it all in. And then when it's time to put the ball down and we got to go kick off, like, we got to go play a football game that we're prepared to go play. And so it'll be an awesome environment. You guys know how I feel about that place. And obviously it's a tremendous opponent. And I know it's a long season. I do. I think you guys probably share the same thought, though, is these two teams are going to be there at the end. This game could be the determining factor on where it's played at some point, if it's a divisional and or a championship round. And so I know there's a lot left, obviously, but I do think it's a very big game because neither of these teams are going to lose a ton.
Last one I've got for you, Dan. I realize you probably watch mostly offensive and defensive tape, but I'm just curious for your thoughts on the kickoff moving out to the 35 on a touchback. We're all expecting a lot more balls to be in play. And if you're a defense that's kind of middle of the pack and you're playing a high-profile offense, like a Cincinnati, for example, you better have a lot of faith in your coverage unit. But at the same time, you don't want to give Joe Burrow a drive start at his own 35. I mean, he gets 25 yards, and McPherson's on to at least get him 3 points. So are you – I guess first question is, how are you expecting most teams to handle that? Second question, are you expecting scoring to go up in light of where these rules have changed on the dynamic kickoff?
Yeah, I think so. So I think scoring's going to go up in relation to the dynamic kickoff. One, you can now put 3 people back in the return area. Yep. That's a new change as well. So you can utilize, I think there's going to be a little bit more creativity on some of the returns because you can, you know, throwbacks and reverses and fake reverses and 2-man stuff. Like, I think special teams coaches will be very creative in that regard. The second thing is we see kickers kicking field goals so much more consistently from further out than we ever have before. I mean, when Steve played, it was like if you made a 35, 40-yarder, it was a like big deal. If you were attempting a 50-yarder, it was like, wow. Now 50-yarders go in like they're extra points, it feels like. So, you know, the amount of yards that the offense has to gain to feel good about even trying for 3 points is a big deal. And I think what you'll see is, and we were meeting with the NFL a couple of weeks ago, and we were going over some of the new rules is, and Walt Anderson, who oversees the officiating, was saying that a lot of teams, they were expecting more teams to just hit almost like stingers from Tiger Woods, like stinging line drive kicks to try to just kick the ball into that landing zone, take a couple hops and see if they can steal a little bit of time on the coverage while also minimizing return that is, I guess, weight and explosive. So that's something I would pay attention to. I will as an analyst. It's just how teams, the kickoff team, the kickers actually kicking the ball now. And then, you know, what teams and how are they using three returners?
Yeah, I think there is a lot in that. The three returners back opens the door for gamesmanship. And the fact, too, that I've seen even in warmups and in practices, not here in Buffalo, but also the stuff I've seen from other teams, is that everybody's got to have that line drive kick to get it into the landing zone. It's not an easy kick to get it all the way to the landing zone, but still have it bounce. Because as soon as it bounces, the coverage team is released. They can run. So that's, you don't have to wait for the guy to catch it and start running before you take off. So that gives them a couple of bounces. And in a play that's going to take a few seconds, that half second you get while the ball hits is an extra 5 yards of coverage. The whole, you know, the whole data point thing of how fast these guys run. I think it's going to be fascinating, and I'm with you. I wouldn't be surprised to see throwbacks, reverses, ball high, you know, hidden ball tricks coming out of the return game. There's just no reason not to, because I do believe teams will put it in play this year instead of, you know, 90% of them trying to kick it out of the end zone.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just giving a team the ball at the 30, and depending on who the returner is and who you're coverage and all that, but like giving a team the ball at the 35 makes it feel like if you give up three first downs, you know, you're talking points. Giving up 3 points already. Yeah. And obviously that's a big deal.
Yeah. Just one quick thing, Dan, just about everybody we've seen online that has picked this game is expecting it to be a 3 points or less game. I mean, even Steve and I here can admit that top to bottom, Baltimore probably has the better roster just in pure talent. But this playing here is not easy. Bills went undefeated last year, 10-0. Do you see that as a potential equalizer, number one? And number two, do you expect the game to be as close as everybody else seems to think?
I would be shocked if it's not final possession game, one quarterback makes a play, one quarterback doesn't type of thing. Yeah, I would imagine this is a 3 point or less football game. Absolutely, that home field will help. And also, it's not like the Bills have nothing. Like I have Ravens, I believe, have the best roster in the AFC. Yes, top to bottom, just talent wise. Obviously, the Bills have a very good roster. We'll see how healthy specifically the back end is. But yeah, I think it's a great football game. I think both quarterbacks played at an incredibly high level. And hopefully we get one of those like end classic ending ones to start the season. And unsurprisingly, both of them should be there very much so at the end.
Yeah, we're kind of right there with you, Dan. I can't wait to see it kick off. One real quick. What's your thought about the opening game of the entire season, Dallas at Philly? Dallas?
I think Dallas could keep it close. I really do. You know, Philly, like, listen, Philly's obviously ridiculous, but losing Slay matters, you know, and outside of really like Reed Blankenship and Quinyon Mitchell, you know, who's one of their second year corner. Mitchell was a great player. And then Blankenship, who's been a good safety, their secondaries, at least in Philly, has not played a lot together. And so Dallas with those two premier perimeter players at wide receiver in Ferg at tight end, like, I think they can have some success offensively. I would throw a ton of shots opposite Quinyon Mitchell down the field. You know, I think they'll be a little bit better versus the run, massive challenge. If they get into the passing situation, do they have anybody that can go get Hurts now? And so I think it'll be closer than, you know, a blowout, which a lot of people anticipate. But Philly's the better football team. Philly should win.
All right.
Dan, thanks as always. Appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, guys.
All right. That's Dan Orlovsky, whose appearances on One Bills Live are presented by Caesars Sportsbook.
Welcome back. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Thrilled as a new season arrives once again to be joined on the line, the Western Hotline, by our friend, Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker. Make sure to check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, daily NFL podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Ross, here's to a new season. How are you?
I am fantastic. Here's to a new season. Huge game for you guys Sunday night. Great to talk with you again. I appreciate the flexibility moving it up an hour. You know, I've learned that when you're a head coach of your kids, you can make the practice time whenever you want. When you're the assistant coach, the practice time is when the head coach makes it. So I don't know. Unless he changes things, I don't know if I'll be available at 5. So I'm glad we're doing 4. Although volleyball season only goes till the end of October. So maybe if you guys want to switch back to 5 later, we can do that. I don't know if that throws people off or whatever. But anyway, I'm glad we made it work.
Same here. So it's week one, and we'll get into this pretty big matchup here to start the season. No tiptoeing into the pool here for the Bills or the Ravens. I want to ask you, though, from your experience as a player, what is this week like? Like, I'm looking at this as an analyst and trying to predict outcomes, fantasy football and betting, whatever else. And it seems like, well, just sort of logically, it's the hardest season to know what you're going to get, or the hardest week, rather, I should say, to know what you're going to get. Is there any of that as a player? I mean, is preparation different this week than later?
Yeah, it is, because you don't really know what to watch. You know, it's funny. I got for radio Cowboys-Eagles Thursday night for Wessler 1, and then Sunday my game is the Arizona Cardinals and the New Orleans Saints. And so, like, the New Orleans Saints have a totally new coaching staff, right? So you really don't know what they're going to do schematically in that opener. You know, the Eagles Thursday night, they have a new OC. So not only are they, you don't know what the Eagles are going to, the new wrinkles for them offensively, but then the Eagles aren't even saying who's starting at 3 different positions, corner, safety, and linebacker. So feels like there's always more unknown with week one. There's also just a higher level of excitement. You kind of just went through the worst part of the year for whatever it was, 6 or 7 weeks, and now it's like, okay, you know, this is our team. I'm on the roster. I'm getting paid. You know, we got through the hard part. We're at the fun part, or the more fun part, about to get this thing going. You're excited for the full stadium and for the promise of what could be. It's one of the best weeks of the year. There are some issues from a preparation standpoint, but the coaches usually do a good job of that because they watch so much, right? What's really interesting for the Bills and the Ravens is that, you know, they just played each other. You yeah. know, I mean, that was like late January, so that is rare, I feel like, for an opening week to have a game tape you can watch that should be mostly the same guys, the same coaches. There should be a lot to carry over.
Ross, year to year, how different would your view or any of your teammates' view of what the season was going to hold or what you thought it might hold? How much would that vary? Like, were there years, or was every year the same? Like, we're good, let's go. We're everybody 0-0, we can go win the division. Or were there years where you knew, like, we don't have it, but, you know, I'm here, good. I'm gonna do everything I can, keep my spot. But, you know, the big picture, we probably don't have a team that's really going to contend for much. Like, is that a little too real? Is there, like, a denial of that from a player standpoint that you would want to avoid?
So, you know what's interesting about that, okay? The whole week is designed to prepare you to beat the opponent that week. And so you come in Wednesday, and the coaches spent every hour Monday and Tuesday coming up with this plan. And the reality is, on a week-to-week basis, you really do think you're going to win every week. Because on a week-to-week basis, they come in and they're like, hey, they're doing this, and we're going to do that against it. And this guy's not playing that well, so we're going to attack him here. And then you do all these things Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. By the time you get to Sunday, you're feeling pretty confident about that game. Now, before this season, I can recall, I probably told you guys this story, but in 2006, I got traded from New England to Cleveland for a conditional 7th-round pick, which is the highest honor an NFL player can achieve. and, you know, Charles Bentley had tore his knee up, so I was immediately, like, the starting center. And all these reporters came up to me, and they were, you know, it was like the second day I was there or whatever, and they were asking me, and I said, well, let me just tell you,
I've heard great things about Romeo Crennel from everybody in New England. They just sing his praises. We've got some really impressive young talent in Kellen Winslow and Braylon Edwards. You know, I think the sky's the limit for Charlie Fry at quarterback. You know, that's what I said. If they forced me to be honest, I would have said I knew after a day I would have been like, Romeo Crennel's way too nice, not going to work out for him as a head coach. Charlie Fry, I can't believe he's the starting quarterback here. That's wild. Kellen Winslow and Braylon Edwards are talented, but they're already rich and they're kind of punks. So I don't know. I'm not expecting much from them. So we'll probably be lucky to win four games, but they're going to pay me money to play football in Cleveland this year. So I'm happy to be here.
Right.
Whatever. I mean, that's what I would have said if I was being honest.
Yeah,
it was pretty clear we weren't going to be very good.
Whatever it takes, I guess, you know, to get through the media stuff and then to sort of keep your head right. Ross Tucker with us on the Western Hotline. Ross, please forgive me for not remembering. Were you here for Bills Ravens in January?
I was not.
Okay.
I did. Was that divisional round?
Yeah. All right. I thought maybe you were.
I know what I did. I did Texans Chiefs the day before on radio.
Okay. Well, it was a game where, I mean, the Bills got through it. They did fine offensively. They could never stop Baltimore, but Baltimore had three turnovers. Of course, the two-point play dropped by Mark Andrews to end the game, and the Bills win by two. These two teams, as we've also talked about several times, have kind of parallel existences, you know, just sort of living in the Chiefs' shadow despite being so excellent. How do you compare the Bills and the Ravens off of last year going into this one?
Well, what's interesting is I think the Ravens are a more talented team, right? I think, you know, when you look at, like, the Ravens and some of the guys that they have some really high-level players, right? Like, Kyle Hamilton, I mean, that guy's a top 10, maybe top 5 defensive player in the league. I don't really feel like the Bills have that guy. Madubuike and Travis Jones, they're D tackles. I think the Bills would love to have guys like that. And as much as they like Terrell Bernard and Milano when he's healthy, those guys are not Roquan Smith. So what's interesting is I think top to bottom, the Ravens are the more talented team. You know, like I think James Cook's a good player. I don't think he's Derrick Henry. You know, I don't think their tight ends are Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely. So that actually, to me, is somewhat of a feather in the cap of Sean McDermott as well as Josh Allen, that the Ravens, I mean, the Bills have basically done more with less over the last 3 or 4 years. Now, they had Stephon Diggs and whatever, but I think it's really fair to say these teams, I love how you described it, parallel universe or whatever. And, you know, every year I'm pretty confident the Ravens have had more All-Pros, more Pro Bowl players, whatever. Well, the Bills have beat them the two playoff games. The Bills have been the more conference championship games. I mean, the Bills have done more than the Ravens have. So I think that is certainly a feather in the cap of McDermott and Josh Allen. I would also say, and it's the case again this year, the Bills have the easier division, right? Like, they're not having to play the Steelers and the Bengals. And even a couple of these years, the Browns have, like, made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I think the Dolphins have been okay, but the Patriots have been down for a while. The Jets have been down for a while. So I think that's helped that both of those playoff games have been in Buffalo.
How much, if at all, do you put any stock in the Ravens talking about wanting to, like, right the wrong from last year here? There's been a consistent amount of chatter, I would say, about that. That, like, they want to come in here and show everybody what's what. I mean, it's, you only do so much. We all know that these teams are ultimately going to be judged on what happens if they should play again in January. So it's September and it's the opener, but is there anything to be gained from pouring a lot into, you know, we want to show these guys that we can handle them?
You know, I think there is, right? I mean, there's always motivation
It's the opener. You know, the Bills are fired up. Home opener last year with this stadium, Sunday Night Football. But I do think that pain and that regret has been a motivator for the Ravens all off season. I mean, I've spoken with some people with the Ravens. They're so sick of being talked about as the regular season kings, the regular season champions, because I don't know if you guys know this, but they have so many statistics that are just incredibly impressive, right? Like yards per attempt and, mm-hmm. and all those things where the Ravens on paper are the best team in football, better than the Chiefs, better than the Eagles, but they lose games they shouldn't lose. They don't get it done in the playoffs, all those kind of things. But I think they are supremely motivated. I said this on the Even Money betting podcast today. I like the Ravens in the game. I do think that that matters. I think the Bills have an edge to bounce back and win the Super Bowl and all those things. But the Bills aren't playing the Chiefs Sunday night. The Ravens are playing the team that they've been thinking about. And so I do give an edge to the Ravens because of that. Yeah, I think it's a good question.
Bills favored by 1.5, total 50.5 on Sunday night. Ross Tucker with us here on WGR. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog Insider Call, is brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Boy, I slipped there. I didn't even have the mayonnaise thing from last year to trip on. All right, Ross. Well, these Bills versus last year's Bills, offense mostly the same. I mean, a couple of changes at wide receiver. Not only do they have their starting offensive line back, they have their backup offensive line back mostly. It's very much the same. Defensively, some important changes. I'm worried more for them about their secondary than anything else by far. Trey White was kind of an unknown already. Now he's injured, may or may not play. Safety's a question. I don't even think like Rapp is so good. We're just sort of like taking him for granted at safety. I mean, not fast or anything. Benford's excellent. If this team doesn't win a sixth AFC East title in a row, why won't they have?
Well, first of all, who's starting in the secondary? Is it Benford, Bishop, Rapp, Taron? Who's the other corner?
Well, Taron Johnson's their nickel corner. The second boundary corner is like Max Hairston got hurt, so he's out to begin the year. And Trey White had been squatting on that spot, but he got hurt before the final preseason game. And we don't know. We still haven't gotten a real solid update on what kind of timeline he's on. So there could be very much a your name here at boundary corner to start the season.
Got like that Jamarcus Ingram guy, maybe?
Yeah, Ingram, or there's a draft pick, Strong, who I think has been mentioned as he's on the roster. He's on the depth chart. I mean, he might be the guy.
Well, let me just tell you the way the NFL works. Whichever one of those guys is out there, he's going to have Chris Collins. We're talking about him a lot because that's who the Ravens are going to attack, right? And so then the Bills are going to try to protect whoever that is, which means Benford's going to have to really play well because he might be singled up a bunch. That makes it fascinating. Honestly, Mike, you know, barring a Josh Allen injury, I would have a really tough time picturing anybody else winning this division. I mean, I think the Bills are four games better than anybody else. I think the Dolphins are going the wrong direction. There's a lot of hype around the Patriots that I'm not like, I think they'll be better, but I'm not buying this 9 or 10 wins in playoffs. Did any of these people watch the Patriots play football last year? Like, and people are acting like, oh, they got a 9 or 10 wins playoffs. Like, listen, like Mike Vrabel is a better coach than Gerard Mayo, but Tom Brady's not walking through that door. And the Jets, I don't even know what to think of the Jets. So I think it's very realistic that the Bills win 12 games or more, and nobody else in the division wins more than 7. I mean, that's a distinct possibility. So I really can't even answer that with a straight face. I'd be shocked, absolutely shocked, if the Bills don't win that division, barring, obviously, an injury to Josh.
And that was pretty much last year. They won the division by literally five games last year, having clinched it on December 1st.
But they still weren't the number one seed.
Right. I know. Well, that's just
the problem.
Cruel and unusual.
Enough. They need to be the number one seed. Think about it. I told you guys, I have this betting podcast, right? Even Money. Think about the difference between having to win two home games to go to the Super Bowl versus three games, an additional game, and at least one of those games is away. It's a big difference. Like, you think about it, it's like a two-game parlay versus a three-game parlay, right? Like, you're adding a whole other leg to your card there, to your parlay. There's no reason, especially with how good the AFC West is, with the Chargers playoff team, like, that's what makes what the Chiefs did last year incredible. Both the Chargers and the Broncos made the playoffs, and the Chiefs still had by far the best record. I mean, and by the way, the Raiders are going to be better this year. So the Bills need the number one seed. They need to win all the games they're supposed to win, and more than their fair share of the swing one. Sunday night's a swing one. Sunday
night's a big one. Yeah.
Big one to lock in.
Yeah.
The third leg.
What do you think of the Chiefs going into this year, Ross? The other top tier team in the AFC.
Yeah, I think that they are they're my favorite in the AFC, right? I mean, it's like I believe somebody else will beat them when I see it. I think they're better at left tackle with this rookie Simmons than they have been. I think it's scary to think that they could have Xavier Worthy, Hollywood Brown, Rashee Rice all on the field the last 10 games of the year at the same time. And I've had multiple people tell me that Travis Kelce basically went psycho this offseason because he wants to finish his career on a high note and is in, like, tremendous, tremendous shape. And they're expecting him to have his best year in a few years. So I'm taking all that, and I think the Chiefs will have a worse record, but be a better team. I don't think they're going to win every one-score game for the rest of my life. I think they'll lose a couple one-score games, but I think they'll be a better team. And I think they're still the favorite in the AFC, which is why the Bills or the Ravens, whoever, need to get number one seed and need to make the playoff race, playoff path for the Chiefs as difficult as possible.
You mentioned those other teams out there, the Raiders even being improved. Do you think Denver and the Chargers take a step from being playoff teams last year and even challenge KC for the top of that division, or is that a bridge too far?
I do not think the Chargers do. I think the Rashawn Slater injury is significant, but I do think the Broncos have that in them. Yeah. I mean, I think Peyton's a heck of a coach. Their defense is awesome. Their O-line is awesome. If Bo Nix can take that next step, I think it's definitely, you know, my guy Steve Fezzik on Even Money today. This is the second week in a row where he said he thinks the Broncos are very live to win that division. I'm not going that far, okay? But I do think that's within the realm of possibility, yes. Not for the Chargers, but absolutely for the Broncos.
Everything you said, whenever it comes to my mind, I sort of put on the same voice you did, just incredulous as to how last year didn't ever break right for the Bills in the standings. Everything you said, plus they had it clinched with a week to go so they could rest everybody in Denver for that game.
It's unbelievable.
That should have been a beast of a game. That should have been a beast of a game for them. You know, Denver was playing for the playoffs, on the road, altitude, and they got to, you know, sit in lounge chairs.
And then how about this? Then they get a week off. Then they play the Texans at home while the Bills have to absolutely destroy themselves against an awesome Ravens team. Now, the flip side is we can say that, Mike, but the year before, the Chiefs did it. They went to Buffalo and won. They went to Baltimore and won. The point is we know they're really good. But you still want to increase their degree of difficulty every year in the playoff path, and they did not do that. It's so reminiscent of when the Patriots had the one or two seed, and they were home, and they were in the AFC. And it's so reminiscent of the Brady Belichick years. It's fascinating.
It is. I did a rant on this the other day. Just nobody needed the seven seed. in this sport. Like, it was perfect before, where 1 and 2 would get the byes, but 1, I know I sound like sour grapes, but this is really how I feel objectively. Like, 1 gets home field, but 2 gets the week off. I mean, you go way back, then all the division winners had byes, and there was just the 2 wild cards. But who asked for the 7 seed? Who was out there, Ross? Maybe somebody on your Even Money or one of your shows, your many shows, was like, you know what the sport really needs to become popular? A 7 seed in each conference. And these teams always stink, and the games are bad, but we had to have them. And it just it amplified that advantage that the 1 seed gets. Again, I'm sure I sound to somebody just passing through Buffalo like, oh, listen to this guy. Right, the Chiefs. To your last point, the Chiefs actually did win it the year before from the road, but still, like, well, no, nobody needed
thing,
it.
Two things. Number one, you're right. I think they've overly weighted the number 1 seed. If anything, I would think at this point add an 8 seed to the playoffs and at least make those guys have to play that first week. I mean, they added the game for money. I get it. Money is good. We like money. I was a player. I get it. But then add an 8 team and have the number 1 team have to play for even more money so that it's not that overweighted. Right. The flip side of that, Mike, is like, okay, then go get the number 1 seed.
Yep.
You know? Like, yep. If that's the way it is, then go get – if it's that important and we all recognize it is, then get it.
Right. Ross, thank you. It's such a privilege to have you on every week during the season. We're glad it's here.
Absolutely. Great to talk with you guys. Can't wait till next week. Should be a fun one Sunday night.
Enjoy New Orleans. That was Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker. Make sure to check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast.
Good morning. Jeremy White, Sneaky Joe DiBiase here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Happy Tuesday. Hope you had a good long weekend. Good Labor Day weekend. Weather was great. Now we're on to football season. Games coming as quickly as Thursday and then Friday. YouTube in Brazil. You know, the normal NFL start to the season. That's it is normal now, right? It is normal to start with a Thursday night opener and then a Friday game in Brazil for a second consecutive season. So we've got some football stuff to get to, some Sabre stuff as well. And joining us on the Western Hotline is Bills and Sabres Chief Operating Officer Pete Quelli, who joins us this morning. Pete, good morning. Jeremy and Joe, thanks for taking some time today.
Good morning, guys. Good to talk to you.
Busy time of year for you. I've been pointing out that both teams play games this month. I mean, the Bills, of course, regular season begins on Sunday, and then the Sabres are going to be here before anybody really even realizes it because the preseason gets started. So I'd imagine things are ramping up in your department.
Yeah, I mean, it does kind of sneak up on you. Obviously, the game on Sunday night, nationally televised, that's going to be huge. And then we're 37 days away from dropping the puck at the arena. So, yeah, we're in the middle of it right now, but it's exciting.
How is it, you know, being the showcase game of the weekend, arguably? I mean, you've got the kickoff opener and the Brazil game I just mentioned, but Sunday night football, you know, when the schedule came out, I feel like Bills fans probably felt that, I don't know, the pride you get when you realize that your team is one that people around the country really want to watch.
Yeah, you know, you're seeing it in a lot of different areas, right? We're getting these nationally televised games. Obviously, Hallmark came in to shoot a movie this year. We had Hard Knocks. It's, you know, you're a little bit of a victim of your own success. I think people still love the traditional Sundays at 1, but when you've gotten to the level that we get, you know you're going to get a lot of the national games. So, I'm probably like everyone else, a little excited about kicking it off. We know we got a tough opponent coming in here, but it's going to be a great game, and it's fun to be on a national stage for the opener.
Some business stuff to get to. You know, we're going to get some Sabres black and red theme nights. I feel like every time we're talking uniform stuff, whether it's red helmets or the rivalry series. I want to ask you about the rivalry series and a little bit of that process. First off, though, how's reception been on those when it comes to what the Bills will be wearing?
Incredible. Incredible. You know, you're always – concern is probably the wrong word, but you're always wondering, what are people going to think? We liked it. Obviously, the league liked it and made a lot of changes to kind of get it exactly where we thought it would be and tried to roll it out the right way to everybody. But yeah, the reception has been really good. I think people are obviously excited to see that uniform in action and, you know, to get the merchandise when it comes out too, just a cool look. I think it really represents Buffalo in a lot of ways, you know, from the helmet to the logo on the shoulder, the Bills Mafia on the inside collar. A lot of the high points that people love to see in new uniforms, I think we hit on.
How involved was the team in that? I know that was like a league, right? A league endeavor and Nike as well. So how much feedback was there through that process?
I would describe it as more of a league initiative. I think they had some thoughts on the direction to go in, but we did have a lot of input. You know, we sat down with them multiple times throughout the process and said, you know, this isn't necessarily representative of the brand. Here's something that we'd really like to see. Here's something that we think resonates with the fans. So league driven, but with a lot of input from us.
How much is how the jersey will sell in that, you know, like if it's just a white jersey, maybe you're wondering that versus this one has got the ice detail on the top and, you know, the way the logo looks on the side. It, you know, you see on social media like mock-ups, here's what it could look like based on the teaser. And sometimes it just be like a plain white jersey. And this one certainly is not just that.
It's just got a lot of kind of hidden elements, I think, that people really enjoy. The discoverable piece of a uniform like that and all those little descriptive pieces. You know, when we start down, I've done a number of these projects, you don't really look at how is it going to sell necessarily. If you hit the right tone, and again, it really represents the brand and maybe it's a little bit different, that usually takes care of itself. And I think in this case, and so far, everyone's really responded extremely well to it.
Pete Guillet joining us. We're going to get some Sabres matters in a moment. I just want to keep things on the Bills for just one more minute. I want to ask you, have seen stories about PSL sales and how things are going in the new Highmark Stadium. We had a chance to walk through again last week recently. So, you know, we get to the winter months. That thing is going to start looking completed on the outside, and then the interior has to be finished, of course. But in terms of the general project and getting people in there to their seats, how are things going?
Going very well. You know, I really do wish, I know it's impossible, but not unlike you guys, to get everybody through there at some point, because I think you guys are doing a good job of articulating what you're seeing when you walk through, but it's hard to describe to people how different this experience is going to be. So it'd be great to get everybody through. But the Bills experience piece has worked really well. I think people feel like it's representative and it's been brisk. You know, I think last time I talked to you guys, I said it was really important to get everybody through the process. We've gotten all of our season ticket holders through the process. Now we've gone back and we're talking to the people that just hadn't engaged for whatever reason and went out with, you know, kind of a last chance type email because we don't want you to miss out. And the response to that has been really high. So I think there's a lot of people that were probably sitting on the sidelines, season ticket holders, waiting to see how things played out. And they've seen the activity over there and now they're excited about getting on board. So the overall process really well, still moving at a high clip, and we're going to be going off the waiting list here in the middle of September, and not long after that we should be done.
That was going to be my follow-up. If you're on the waiting list, you think in the next couple of weeks you would hear if there's availability?
Yeah, we tentatively were planning on closing out on season ticket holders September 17th, so that's when we would go out. So yeah, by mid to late September, you should be in line to start getting a call.
All right, very good. For the Sabres, the season, you said, puck drops a little over a month away and preseason games are getting started. Improvements, changes to the KeyBank Center. What can fans expect when they get into KeyBank Center this season?
Well, I think you guys know, like every year we've been trying to do something over there. You know, we're in charge of the capital improvements in that building. So last year put in the new video board, which was a nice move. And this year we've gotten a lot of feedback in the off season about the sound in the building. You guys are there, you know, whether it's how it's kind of modulated, the quality of it, or how it's directed, could be a little bit challenging. So we put a new sound system in this year. We really think combined with the video board, that's going to really change the in-bowl experience for people. So, you know, that was number one. We had a lot of comments relative to ingress, egress, you know, from the time people get on property and get into the building and then how they leave. You know, we put some new evolved technology in there to get people in the building faster. For instance, I think you guys probably saw too, you know, concessions is a big area of concern, is probably a strong word, but people want to make sure they're getting the right value proposition. So, you know, we listened to our season ticket members and we put in a new value member menu this year with a number of items that people love, just trying to provide more value when people come into the building. So we hope we've enhanced the experience and we're really trying to push the value piece.
And security upgrades also that are coming, like for when people are coming into the games in the first place?
Yeah, you know, that's that evolved tech. It's going to be at every entrance. So when you walk in now, you don't have to empty your pockets. You go right in, get queued up to get ticketed and get into the building. We think that's going to speed things up from an ingress standpoint. We're also kind of looking at how people leave. You know, that's working more closely with, you know, the public authorities to make sure that we're set up the right way to get people out of the building right now. But the thing we can control is how we get them in. So we're starting with an evolved tech. So when you walk in, you'll have a completely different experience this year than you had last year.
So single ticket games go on sale today, single game tickets, 10 a.m. today for Sabres fans.
Today. Yeah, and look, it's going to be great. We're opening up on October 9th, obviously against the Rangers. Excited about that game. 10 of our first 14 at home. So, you know, we need to get off to a good start. We had a pretty good season at home last year. We want to see that carry over. Obviously, you get a little bit better on the road and put those two pieces together. But we think people are going to be excited. We made a lot of changes in the offseason, obviously bringing in Kesselring and Timmons to shore up the defense, and Lyon as a backup goalie. You know, made a lot of changes off the ice, bringing in Yarmo and Brian Gallivan on the strength and conditioning side, and Eric Staal. So we can't wait to start playing. And I think, it's always interesting until you do and get on the ice and see exactly what that team looks like. But, you know, 37 days out, we're getting close.
When it comes to the schedule, it's kind of a similar question to what I asked about the rivalry uniform. Like, how much input do you have in the schedule, the home schedule? I know home and away might not be it, but time of day. One thing I noticed is this year seems a little bit light on the early afternoon games, whereas years past had been a good number of 1 o'clock games. This year, I feel like we're seeing more of a 4 and 5 o'clock window. Is that something that the team is targeted, or is that just the league, the television networks? How does it all kind of come together?
Yeah, that's more league and TV driven. Now we do get the schedule in advance, and we go through it a few different times, and there's a couple of iterations, and we give some input. You know, candidly, trying to focus on the hockey side first, just to make sure that it's competitive. You know, looking at those kind of back to backs and road stretches, and making sure we're not getting in a situation where performance could be a challenge. When those boxes are checked, you start looking at, all right, what are the schedules, what are the games, what are the nights, what are the times that make the most sense. But we start on the competition side. And then we move over. And, yeah, I think we'd love to see a few more early games, especially on the weekends. They're great for families and kids. We got a few good ones, obviously, you know, opening up with all those games at home and having a couple of big-time opponents coming early. And I think there's 7 or 8 games that we're really focused on before the first of the year that we think people are going to be attracted to. But, yeah, it'd be great to have a few more early ones. It's just, I think, for me, it's better for the families and the kids.
On the Sabres in the season ticket base, I'd seen you make comments maybe about a month ago, and how, like, all of this you would hope relates to what the season ticket base is, and how you would have maybe an expectation of, like, what growth like that would look like if the team is competitive and the team is good, and maybe what past examples of that would look like.
I mean, you've seen how this building operates. It's been full. You see the TV ratings. You know the fans are there. I mean, one thing that I've seen since I've gotten here, I think the support of the team is still there. It's just not directed where you want it right now because of all those years of missed playoffs. If we can get this thing turned around, highly confident that people are going to come back because it's a hockey town, and that hasn't changed at all. Season ticket base has been relatively stable over the last few years. We've been renewing close to that 90% number, but it started low, and we've got to drive that number. I'd love to see it at 12 to 13,000. I think you can fill the rest then with individual game tickets and start getting people into the system and maybe walk them up the ladder to become season ticket holders. But this year, kind of focused on a 10-game flex plan just to let people come in and experience the product, to get them into the system. Hopefully they enjoy it and want to come back. So right now it's about optionality. You're going to have your base of season ticket holders, but if they can come in on a partial plan, if they want to come in as a group, or if they want to come as an individual game buyer, just make sure they get in, have a good time, get into the system, and hopefully they become season ticket holders down the line.
Bills and Sabres COO Pete Quelley on the Western Hotline. To that point, you know, Pete, one thing we see a lot is when you announce upgrades or any sort of improvement, you've got your fan that'll respond with, that doesn't matter, I just want to win. But I feel like as you're laying out that plan about season ticket holders, that it is definitely both things. You want the people that are there to feel like it's worth going, whether it's food, whether it's amenities, whether it's whatever it is to get them in the door. So, you know, considering what you've done this year for your upgrades, what's on the list maybe in the future? How much of an overhaul, or how many more changes are potentially available within the arena?
Yeah, well, literally everything's on the list because right now it's a 30-year-old building. I think it's as a hockey facility, maybe it's the one that hasn't been renovated most recently. So, you know, we're looking at the long-term functionality of that facility right now. And so literally everything's on it. We've got Populous in as an architect kind of looking at it. What do we need to do in the future? How do we make it better? How do we improve the experience? And probably just as importantly, how do we attract more events down there? That building needs to be a catalyst for growth in downtown Buffalo. I think we've got, obviously, the suburbs on lock with the new stadium and what we're talking about doing here. But, you know, we want to see things pick up in downtown Buffalo. And we drove about 1.3 million in people through that building last year. I'd love to see that number north of 1.5 million because I know that what impact that can have on the city. So we're looking at every aspect we can with the focus on the team and then trying to get as many events in there as humanly possible.
Are there lessons about the changing sports fan, whether that's demographics, whether that's the way they like to take in a game? I'm thinking about, you know, your new football stadium and how much standing room there is available, how much you're able to see the game from anywhere. And I'm not sure if, you know, everything is something you could do inside the hockey rink, but is there obviously a changing way people watch these games?
Yeah, I think there is. Look, I mean, you know, technology is key, right? When you come in there, they're going to want to interact, whether it's in game or whether it's on their mobile device. So you've got to make sure you're aware of that. I think you're obviously competing with everything that's going on at home. So you've got to give people a reason to come into that building. They've got to really enjoy the experience. And, you know, like a big part of it's being competitive too. You know, they want to see a team that's competitive on the ice and they want to come support them in person. I still think if you do everything right, that you can get people into that building, even though there's so many more distractions than there have been historically. But if we can get that building where we want it, we get the team performing on the ice, we're confident we can get the fans back to the levels that they used to be.
Pete Crowley, Bills and Sabres COO. Before we let you go, like dates to look forward to, people ask me every time. I mean, I know you might know what it's going to be. The Giant Buffaloes. What's the update on the Giant Buffaloes? If I don't get asked, or if I don't ask this question, I'm going to get it. Why didn't you ask about the Giant Buffaloes? So Giant Buffaloes and past that, actually, like for the new stadium, end zone color, field art, anything like that. Like there are things people kind of want to know what things might look like aesthetically in there. So how much of that is already decided? How much of that is still like part of a process?
I'd say most of it's decided. We haven't really rolled it out yet, as you know. We're getting a lot closer. The building, the shell, the building is basically built. We're turning our attention to the inside details now. You need to get that building kind of buttoned up before winter so people can work through it. I think you know things like the field are going in, the lockers are here now. The basis of the family circle is in place. We'll probably be able to start rolling out some details on what that's going to look like overall sometime in September, we're hoping. But yeah, we're getting close, and those details will kind of start to see them over the next few months, more and more specifics on what that building can look like so people can get a better sense of what that experience is going to be. And look, on the hockey side, you know, we've got the Fan Fest coming up on 9/13. I've heard a rumor that GR might have a team.
It's been discussed.
I don't know if you guys
yes.
are playing or not.
It's been discussed. I am not. Joe's not. There's sources indicate there's a framework of an agreement in place.
I've got high expectations for that team. I want to know who's coaching it, who's putting the team together,
yeah,
and what the expectations are from a performance standpoint.
Low. But the post-game show will be fire. People will be fired up about what they saw out there.
Yeah, you know, but it's going to be fun. FanFest kicks things off on the hockey side. The opener on the 9th. We've got Florida coming in on the 18th. The New Jersey playing them over Thanksgiving is always kind of a fun weekend. There's a bunch of Bills and Sabres weekends again. I think there's three of those. Those are always really cool to have that much going on in town as well. So just, yeah, a lot going on with the football team and obviously a lot to get excited for on the hockey side as well.
Yeah, very good. Well, thanks for, you know, checking in with us and best of luck Sunday and for the Sabres season as well with so much to come in the next couple of weeks and months. It is it's a great time of year. So thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, guys. Look forward to seeing you this weekend.
Bills and Sabres COO Pete Quelly on the Wester Hotline.
And we have another fresh off the practice field set to talk to us now. Player interview appearances on One Bills Live are presented by Tim Hortons. Tim Hortons, the official coffee of the Buffalo Bills, as we welcome in one Tyrell Shavers, who made a number switch in the 11th hour. He is no longer 80 in your program. He is 14, and we'll get to that in a second, but first of all, congratulations, man. Super happy for you. We hear all the time from Coach McDermott how you got to earn this thing, and you earn the right, you know, whether it's to be on the 53, to be on the field on Sundays, whatever the case might be. And holy cow, did you earn it, man. Like, yeah. I mean, the preseason was not pretty for everybody on this roster. I'm not even going to talk about Chicago, but you're one of the few guys that was still making plays in Chicago. wire to wire in the preseason, you were putting it on display. How did you – would you call that the best preseason you've ever put together in your career?
100%. Just being consistent. That was my number one goal coming in, just making plays, but making them consistently every day, doing something, putting some good things on tape. So I think from end to end, that was 100% my best preseason. Yeah.
That's really the hardest part about the whole shooting match, right? It's doing it day in, day out. You got to certainly your athleticism, your size, your strength, all that gets you in the door. But it like every day, it's a very high floor. You know, you take a bad rep, but you can't take another and another and another, right? Mm-hmm. And that is that. You think that's what they tell you about? You know, in the 3 years, and you know, this is your third year leading up to this. You never took a day off. I mean, you were out there all the time.
Yeah.
What do you think was the key to all of that?
Just staying ahead of the game, staying ahead of the curveball, making sure I'm knowing what I'm doing. Taking care of my body is number one because we're out there every single day. Mm-hmm. Of course, the obvious injury, that was the ankle injury. Right. When I went down, my number one goal was to get back out there as fast as possible, regardless if I was 100% or not. I just wanted to get out there so I can put mm-hmm. some more things on tape. So just being ready. Staying ready, you don't got to get ready.
Right.
If there's one area of your game that seemed to take a big leap for the better this year, just from watching you over the years, I thought it was your releases off the line of scrimmage. I thought you were tons more effective off the line and getting separation much earlier than in years past. Not that it was a weakness, but I think you made something better in your game. Was that a conscious focus of yours in the offseason to improve your release game?
Yeah, for sure. I've always been like big on the details. So releases was something not necessarily that I struggle with, but I want it to be better with, because in this league, if you can't get off the line, you can't win.
Yeah.
So that's something I definitely focused on my trainer in the offseason, and just kept working at it. And also my speed too, because it helps with releases getting off the ball.
Right. Yeah, so this year last year, great offensive year for the team. You guys, they scored all kinds of points. Now there's a new faces, including yourself, on the active roster. Give us an idea of the personality of last year's group compared to this year's group. And obviously the expectations are still high.
Yeah, like you said, expectations are still high, but the standard's the same. We want to do the same things on offense. Everybody eats is obviously the mantra. So everybody just has to go in and do their job whenever their number's called. And I think the rest will it'll play out for itself.
Right.
Special teams is another area where I think you've kind of raised your game. And it was funny, we're doing the broadcast of the Tampa game, and you make the ridiculous one-handed catch in the end zone, which I'm still mad at the ref, by the way, because he ruined our touchdown call.
Yeah.
He ruined our touchdown call. I'll say this. Because he's waving it off.
Yeah.
And you even looked at him, and you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah, he ruined the celebration.
I love how you got up, you pointed at him, because you had it. You knew it was a catch, and you pointed at him like, give me the sign. Yeah. He didn't do it, and it's like, come on, man.
He messed it up.
Totally messed the whole moment.
So you make that play. So you make that play, and then I think it's on the ensuing kickoff, you guys lose contain, and you come 40 yards clean across the field and knock the guy out of bounds. Otherwise, he's out the gate probably and maybe in the end zone. To me, that was a microcosm of your summer and preseason, because it's like, they want him to do a little bit more on offense. Well, here he is in the last preseason game making a stupid catch and making a play that isn't even there to be made, really. And then, they want him to play more on special teams. There he is, running 40 yards across the field from the backside of the formation to knock a guy out of bounds and touchdown-saving play. Like, there isn't anything you could have – I don't think there was anything else you could have really done. And I know in interviews you even said, like, hey, I'm not taking it for granted. I'm not counting my chickens. Like, last year I thought I – did enough to make the 53, but how much on pins and needles were you when you knew roster cutdowns were coming last Tuesday? Were you still on pins and needles, or were you breathing a little easier with never know, right?
Yeah, I was on pins and needles 100%. I'm undrafted, nothing's ever guaranteed, right? Nothing's promised. I think that Tuesday I woke up at around 4 or 5 a.m. just sitting there.
Yeah.
And every time a notification on my phone went off.
Looking at the ceiling.
Oh, here we go.
You want your phone to be quiet.
It's a Chick-fil-A notification. I'm like, oh, my God. But it's nerve-wracking.
So did you get a call saying, hey, you made it, or did you just not getting no call
was your notification?
Yeah,
right?
No phone call. I looked at my phone 100 times.
4 o'clock. You got to wait till 4 o'clock till it's finally. It's like you're waiting, watching the clock.
Yeah, I had a little idea around noon or 1, because that's the time we started meetings for the day, that day.
Okay.
So around that time, it was like, okay, I still haven't got anything. I guess it's time to go in, like a normal day for me.
Right.
But it was my first time making this, so I kind of felt a little different coming in, almost all right, so I guess we just keep moving.
Absolutely.
Now.
Huh? Yeah.
So
absolutely.
What should we expect in terms of the family contingent at this game on Sunday night? Because they may not have even had enough time in that game you got called up against the Jets last year, and lo and behold, you score a 69-yard touchdown. If your family wasn't here, they were probably ticked about it.
Yeah.
But now there's at least a ramp-up for them to prepare and get here. So what should we expect from the Shavers family contingent this weekend?
This weekend, my sister will be here. but she's not going to the game. She's coming to I just had a beautiful baby girl.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
She's 2.5 That's months. Right. So she's just coming to spend time with her at the house and watch over her.
Okay.
And then
so you have a built-in babysitter.
It's about you.
Yeah, basically.
It ain't about you.
It's not about She's not coming for me.
She ain't coming for
you. Yeah, at all.
Yeah.
But I'm sure over the next coming weeks it'll be flowing for sure.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Girl, that's awesome.
That's awesome. Avori Carter Shavers, right?
Yeah. Avori Capri, we changed it after the birth. We actually changed our middle name.
Oh, Capri. Very nice. Capri.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank Congratulations.
I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah. We had to go ask for the papers back. My fiance was like, let's change it. I was like, all right, we got to call the nurse back in. We got to get that paper back.
Oh, my gosh. That is wild. That's wild. All right. Time now for this week's Timbits Timeout, presented by, of course, Tim Hortons, where we solicit the fans to ask Bills players a unique question. So this one comes from Nate this week, and he asks, do you have any pregame routines that help you ease out the nerves, or even just feel more ready for the game?
Honestly, I'm really big in my faith. It's my number one thing, my number one support system. So I listen to my music, whatever it is, like it could be slow jams, rap, whatever, anything. Mm-hmm. But right before the game, when we come in from warm-ups and we go back out, I put on gospel music.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it calms me. Like, we're getting ready to go to war.
Yeah.
So going out there, we're all nervous and anxious. It's like, it doesn't really work for me. So the gospel music is something that calms me, calms my nerves, and gets me locked in and ready to go.
Yeah, and I know you've been around for 3 years, so you know you've seen the atmosphere here on a primetime opener at home. What are you going to be telling the rookies so that you know their eyes aren't popping out of their head and they're freaking out before the game?
Yeah, I'll just make sure I tell them you're playing the same game you've been playing, and that's something somebody told me last year before my first call up. He's like, "You nervous?" And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "For what? You're playing the same game you've been playing since you were a kid." And it kind of put it in perspective for me. Like, it's literally the same game. There's just more people watching.
Yeah, and certainly, too, we've watched you go from undrafted to earning a roster spot over the last couple of years. And you, one of the things about – we talk about it all the time on our show about guys get what they earn in this building. They don't give a guy this. Even if he's drafted high, he has to earn his spot and earn his reps. And you've earned every bit of it. So you kind of got to remember that, right? I mean, it's just like, hey, I got here because I deserve to be here.
For sure, 100%. It's something that's always on my mind, too, is, like, I went to 3 different schools. I've been through the gutter. I deserve this moment, and I'm going to show why I got it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, good luck on Sunday night. Stay healthy. But ball out, man. Like, this is it. You waited a long time for this. Week one, and here we go. So congrats
we're
again.
We're very happy for you.
And good luck. Good luck against the Ravens. Get that big dub. To kick the season off right.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
That's Tyrell Shavers, Bills wide receiver, joining us here in studio. Player appearances presented by Tim Hortons.